Welcome to CII Podcasts.
I would like to introduce you to Professor Manas Ranjan Mishra. Professor Manas Ranjan Mishra, with over 20 years of expertise, is a renowned designer educator. He is a master of industrial product design from IIT Delhi and an electrical engineer from IGIT Sanand. Currently, he heads UPS School of Design's Industrial and Product Design Department and is the spokesperson for internationalization and industry outreach. With vast experience in design education and consultation, he has led workshops for major corporates like HCL, Infosys, and Mahindra & Mahindra. Pursuing his PhD from UPS, he is guided 190+ Master of Design projects and secured 85+ design patents. Professor Manas is a respected member of various design school board of studies across the country. Professor Manas Mishra's academic journey spans various distinguished roles. He began as an assistant manager in design and development at KILCO Private Limited, followed by assistant professor positions at MS Ramaiah School of Advanced Studies and design faculty at Srishti School of Art, Design and Technology. Since July 2014, he has been a dedicated professor at UPS School of Design, enriching the design education landscape with his extensive experience and commitment. I would like to invite Professor Manas Ranjan Mishra to initiate the conversation with Professor Vijay. Over to you, Professor Manas.
Thank you. And who doesn't know the personality sitting out here, Professor Vijay and Professor Pradyumna? Like, we have followed your footsteps, I read your books, saw your videos, then we also learned as a student, and now I'm teaching to the students the same thing what I learned from you. And it's really my privilege that I'm getting the opportunity to interact with you on this public forum. And so, as we know, we all are from the design fraternity. If you are from communication, if you are from industrial design, so let me ask you the very primitive questions what generally culminate in our mind, that in your opinion, can design be perceived as methods to create preferable futures? Because a lot of futures are on stake right now. So can you please put some light on this, sir?
Okay, sure. Let me try. Thank you, Manas. So now to the question, Manas. Yes, the design as it is understood today will be a very powerful force which will determine our preferable future. But having said that, design used to be considered very differently. For many years, as many of you know, about 30, 40 years ago, design was just form giving and giving aesthetic improvements to one thing, a product or a message, or craft-based design. So that perspective of design has changed over time. In the last 35, 40 years. The design today has got much more meaning, and it is much more valuable to the world of innovation. So being so, it will definitely be definitely have a positive impact on the future that we are seeking, especially the word that you give is preferable future, right? If the future is preferable, there is some underlying meaning to that about human beings. Anything that you, any innovation, any design that you produce is ultimately going to be used by a person, a human being. So whether if that person prefers that product, then we have a great preferable future, right? So to me, design, the new definition is about humanizing the world, and underlying the basic fundamental of design is humanizing the world. That's why we in design we start with understanding people and their needs and their aspirations and try to build innovations around that. If as long as that is the case, pretty sure, I'm very confident that design will play a very impactful role in creating a preferable future, preferable for human beings.
Thank you, sir. As you rightly said, like initially we used to say that product design or any design is like humanizing the technology, but it's very beautifully coined by you, like humanizing the world is the future when you talk about design. So when you talk about the world, then why do certain nations traditionally perform better in how they perceive and integrate design in their lives? And however, the design can play a big role in design community platform. So what is that actually the factor matters when some nation traditionally perform and some nation don't?
Yeah, it's a natural phenomenon for nations to create a vision for the future, right? And many nations are very proactive in terms of taking innovation or design innovation at the forefront of their vision. Many nations have done that very, very proactively, right? I have gotten personal experience that many of the governments and nations are trying to do that. So for example, just to give you an illustration, Singapore as a nation in around 2004 was reconsidering its national mission by looking at the rapid developments South Korea and China were doing at that time. So they took upon as a challenge to make innovation as a policy at a national level. Right? That's where they brought in experts from all around the world to build innovation competency. That's an example of a proactive step a nation has taken to make innovation at the forefront. That sort of resulted in their initiatives and a lot of innovative ideas that they are implementing in the real world. And as you know, probably Singapore is one of the most innovative governments of the world today. Right? So that's just one example. But thinking about the nations, under all the factors that affect what a nation does, the primary factor to me is the government. The government of a nation is the one that impacts the entire mission and the entire progress of a nation. Even if you look at our day-to-day life, yours and mine, we are impacted by a lot of organizations. For example, in my life, Google plays a big role, right? I do Google searches and browsing and Google Maps and Google Drive and Google email, Gmail, and all kinds of things.
Google is half of our life now.
Right, yeah. Amazing, right? An organization playing a major influential role. But if you really think about, think deeper about, is there any other entity in the world that affects you more than Google or Apple? To me, if I really think about it, to me, it is the government. Every little action that I take, the government is there. It's not visible like Google. It is invisibly impacting your life. When you're commuting, when you're taking a bus ride, when you're driving a car, when you're buying a home, when you're doing a financial transaction. In every one of those daily life interactions, government plays a major role, right? So that's where we have to pay attention to what the government is doing. The government is trying to sort of serve us with policies and innovations. Civic improvements. As designers, recognizing that government plays a very important role in our life as designers, we should be inspiring the government to serve us better, right? Government is serving us. Can we inspire or help government to serve us better? So that's where we as designers, you mentioned platform, community-based platforms. How do we create those kinds of platforms? Designers can play a big role in planning and strategically positioning public platforms that are about new communication frameworks that will help government implement those platforms in the real world. So to me, that is where we can play a role in helping the government serve our nation better.
Thank you, sir. Look, just now you mentioned again the government has to play a major role while contributing to our society. So you gave the example of Singapore. And what do you comment on this, whether the penetration of design into the society is better in Singapore or better in India? And this follows to my second question is, like, if not, then what kind of steps or what can government do to keep India as the leader in design, whether you can consider this industry 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, whatever it may be. So if it is led from the government, then what should be their steps? How we can be the leader in design?
right. Yeah. I think India is already leading. Every time I visit India, I see the wonderful improvement and the wonderful development that is happening in India. Even last time when I was there a couple of months ago, the amount of energy and enthusiasm the young people have about taking India forward with new ideas and entrepreneurial, you know, initiative is amazing. And we look at it with envy, that kind of amazing enthusiasm and energy. So to me, India is already on the leading path for making innovation work. But compared to, as you mentioned, compared to other countries like Singapore or UAE, for example, let me give you another example. UAE, United Arab Emirates, again, is probably the most innovative government in the world today, in my opinion. The kind of thing that they are doing to...
Any specific example?
Yes, I work with the United Arab Emirates as an advisor to help them with government innovations. For example, we help the UAE government, I advise them to set up innovation center for government innovations, specifically looking at government innovations. It's called MBRCGI now, Mohammed bin Rashid Center for Government Innovations. If you Google it, and you'll see the amazing work that center is doing. But when it was being set up, now that is initiated the UAE government has taken at the Prime Minister's office level to build a center for innovation for governments and as an active you know, initiative. So I was part of that ride, and I literally felt the kind of innovation that they built into the center. For example, they have created, of course, the center is based on essentially the design innovation process to me. Innovation process that we go through, understanding users, doing research and exploring ideas and coming out with government policies or programs. So if you look at some of the specific innovations that the Center for Government Innovations are doing, for example, they have certificate programs that were generated based on innovation thinking, design thinking process. There are lots of workshops and courses that each government employee has to go through. Each government employee has to go through a certification program to be aware and to be sort of prepared for the idea of innovation to be reflected in anything that they do, their policy decisions or program decisions. That is amazing. And they're empowering each member of the government with this kind of design thinking, innovation thinking is amazing. That'll automatically bring in a culture of innovation to the government as a whole. I think the UAE government wants their government to be a model for other governments as well. So they are thriving towards a situation in which any innovation that they bring in for making the government better is replicable, repeatable in other governments as well. That's another amazing idea that as a nation it is doing. So these are very specific examples, as you asked me, Manish.
Great. So when we talk about nations, that's a bit pretty big thing. So for me, actually, it starts from the home, it starts from the family, it starts with the society. So the kind of approach the society takes, the kind of approach the society brings into culture, then the state increase the practice, then the nation actually keep the same practice. So what is the approach one should follow to integrate design and design thinking process for a greater impact in our society? If you can put a little light on that.
The strengths that we have as design innovator is absolutely essential for the growth of society. For example, humanizing our world, right? That is one of the strengths that design innovation brings. So how can we help any society-based programs or innovations with the idea of humanizing it, right? For example, many of the policies and decisions that, administration offices in cities like the mayor's office make for the residents of the people. Many a times, I mean, traditionally, top-down driven, right? Policies are created and it is pushed on to the members of the society or the residents. But it's not a good, very good model to succeed, right? There ought to be bottom-up initiative that is happening at a society level that ought to drive what the programs and initiatives and the policies of the society is. That's where design can bring in a lot of value, because we start with human beings, residents, and residents of the city. If the society is in a city, understanding residents and people and their needs and their aspiration, their pain points, is a starting point for design, right? So that's where design lab can play a major role in bringing about innovation for the society. And not only that, another role that we can play to bring about change in the society is looking at behaviors, right? Human beings, we behave in certain ways, and innovations are supporting those behaviors. And many times, our behaviors are not really rational. That's amazing, right? That we, all of us don't behave in a purely, absolutely rational way. There are a lot of irrational behavior that we engage in. Is it possible to understand that? For example, we know that eating sugar is bad for the health, but we still eat sugar, right? Still, irrational behavior, right? So lots of things that happen to people, how they behave. So we need to understand, we need to be sensitive about those kinds of behaviors. For example, biases. For example, we act based on biases, right? So I'm biased with my own background, outlook, and family life, and then my actions and decisions are very biased. So can we understand? So,
don't you think these biases are based on the kind of learning we had in our previous life or in our journey? If we say in design that empathy has to be there, the designers need to learn empathy and all. So if the parents and the society teaches empathy and bring through design thinking to the young kids, so society will be better. Opinion in this?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right on target.
So shall we keep it mandatory?
Yeah, it has to be mandatory. Not mandatory means it has to be conscious to the people who are studying, to the people who are teaching, right? And the university, and if you take the university context, it has to be a conscious effort to be open to those kinds of new behaviors, whether you are teaching a course or whether the students are learning, right? Whether they are doing research on understanding people's behaviors. So the consciousness is what is important. Mandatory, has a little bit of problem to me, because the moment you say mandatory, it sounds top down, right? You create this regulation and you follow it, right? So it need not be that. It can be, the same effect can be achieved without a top down. That's why I said consciousness of everyone is required to make that happen. But you're right on target. You need to be aware of all those behavioral patterns.
Like initially when we started our design journey, design thinking was a kind of a process and kind of a knowledge creation tool. But as the time flies, then now the design thinking tool become a skill. So you name the kind of departments or kind of faculty or kind of areas, design thinking plays the major role. So now it has become a skill for everybody. So what you say in this?
You're right. It has become a skill for everything. It has been, I am concerned about that. I'm concerned about the idea that design is becoming a skill, or I would rephrase it, design is oversimplified and oversimplified by taking out all the complexities out and then train in such a way that It comes down to developing designs rapidly as a skillful person would do. And there is a danger in that. I'm concerned about that, because, say, for example, you know, more recently there's been a lot of effort on one-day workshops or three-day workshops on design thinking, right? Especially perpetuated by some of the bigger, you know, design consulting firms. But you know, I'm concerned about that. The one-day, three-day workshops positioned as a way to make you a designer, right? It doesn't happen. You cannot.
It doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, it doesn't happen in real life. Right? One day, how can you learn from a workshop and be an effective designer? That's what I meant by oversimplification of the design process, which is a very complex process. By throwing away all the complexities and oversimplifying down to a level, even to a skillful level, that can lose the purpose and the value overall. That's my concern. But having said that, being able to deal with design at a very high level as adding a lot of value to the world and respecting design that way and developing skills for that is absolutely welcome. In order to do that, the skill level will have to come from various directions. You may not, as one individual, you may not be able to do that, right? You have to collaborate. You have to have you have to develop skills to collaborate with other people, other experts.
Can you relate some incidents where the students can become design expert and can learn through engagement activities? May it be short term, may it be little duration based learning?
Yeah, absolutely. I know. In the Institute of Design at Chicago, we have the master's program, graduate program. We don't have the undergraduate program. But the students who come there have at least about 3-4 years of experience in the real world. So they're very mature thinkers, right? Those kinds of students. I'm taking the illustration of those kinds of students. Very mature thinkers who have got some experience, level experience, and they work on design challenges. And some of them without design background. About 60% of our students are without design background. That is amazing. That we value that a lot, because when teams work on design challenges, the multiple backgrounds of the students add a lot of value to the discussion, whether the brainstorming and the conversation that you will have about the design challenge. So back to the question about, can students be leaders or experts in design? Yeah, absolutely. In order to do that, there are something that students will have to consciously do. First of all, they have to reframe their perspective about design. Design is no longer about form giving and making things better looking, right? Design is much larger. Design is humanizing the technology, humanizing the world. In order to understand, human beings really have to go deeper into the minds of people and how they work, their biases, and you know, all kinds of things that we talked about. That's a big challenge as well. So students have realized that to take on this, those challenges. And moreover, any design challenge that students approach has to be dealt with as a system, not one thing. You're not solving one thing. You're not designing one product. There's a whole system around it that has an impact on that one thing. So how do you understand that system? So you can use a lot of methodologies to understand that. And the other thing that students need to do to become an expert is have a disciplined method, disciplined process. This is very important. In my whole career, that's what I have been attached to, a disciplined process. Design is not just about coming out with a bright idea and saying, "Eureka, I have an idea, I can change the world."
Correct.
It's no longer there, right?
It's no longer the work
like that. It's a teamwork, and multiple perspectives will have to come together. Design, the humanized perspective of design, the technology perspective, the business perspective, the market perspective, financial viability perspective, all these will have to come together cohesively So that in order to become a design expert, design student will have to be aware of this, and then bring about or gain expertise in many of these fields. You need not be an expert in technology, but at least you should have the fundamental glossary of terms to talk with that technologist when you're working on a project, right? So those, if you develop those kinds of integrated thinking needed for innovation and develop some fundamental skills to do that, then obviously the design student can become an expert. In our school, and that's what I'm really proud about our students, they're pretty good at that. They can deal with ambiguity, they can deal with multiple disciplines, they can deal with discussions in the boardroom with the business folks. They're equipped to think that way. So that's where the expertise.
Okay, so actually my next question is how to be more creative. This might be seeming very silly, but how to be more creative, to have more strategic approach towards design as a student point of view.
Yeah, from a student point of view, creativity is just one part of design. Design also requires a lot of other skills and competencies, a disciplined way of doing research, understanding behaviors. That's not about creativity, that's about a disciplined process in which you can really understand people and their behaviors, right? And the other thing is, of course, implementation. The other side of creativity is you might have the brightest idea, but the biggest challenge is implementing those ideas in the real world. The real challenges of planning and manufacturing or strategically positioning your roadmap and things like that. Those require, beyond creativity, that requires a whole lot of other logical thinking patterns. So for a design student, to practice creativity, they have to go beyond just creativity coming out with better solutions. They have to go to the entire plethora or the spectrum of activities that they need to do to be creative. So that's where the discipline method or the process is so very crucial for design students to gain competence on. Brainstorming is just brainstorming and creating ideas and solutions, and the concept is one part of that. But to be competent in doing research, finding a lot of information from research and asking the question, what do I deal with all the information? To be able to analyze and seeing patterns in those research results, and then changing those patterns into some kind of a basis for creating solutions, and then creating a whole lot of solutions, and then packaging them in a way that it can be implemented in the real world. So that's the process that they have to be competent on.
The process. So yes. You are in the industry since last around 40 plus years, and the design process remains the same from day one till today. So through your experience in working consultancy, you are also doing open projects abroad. So do you recommend any design process amendments if at all it is needed?
Yeah, absolutely. Design process may seem like a standard process that you can apply. That perspective, because you're thinking about design in a linear way, right? You start with research and analysis and synthesis and prototyping and realization. That's what I've been practicing. But the amendments should go against that. One of the amendments that I value is that it is not a linear process in real life, right? You should be prepared to be flexible to get away from that linearity. For example, when you're brainstorming an idea and a concept comes, that's a fantastic, cool idea. But how do I know whether it'll work? How do I know whether people will want that idea? So you may have to go back to the research mode and do a lot of research to validate whether that idea will work or not. So you're breaking the linearity by going from the ideation stage to a research stage.
So that is kind of a looping?
Yeah, looping is the second one. non-linearity is one thing. You make it non-linear, jump from one place to the other. Looping is another one. Make it iterative, right? The process has to be iterative. You go through one iteration and you might come out with an initial rough idea that you might think might work. You prototype it and test it again. Do some more research, right? Modify it and bring a better solution. That's it. Many iterations of prototyping will lead you to some kind of a pilot idea. Now I'm ready to pilot this idea in the real world, in the real marketplace. Then you pilot it and study it again, iterate again before you launch it. So this non-linear processes and iterative process, these two we have to be very conscious about that and practice that in the real world when you talk about process. Those are the amendments, key amendments that I think are necessary. And beyond that, the new trends, emerging trends that are happening in the real world. So for example, AI, artificial intelligence, right? That's a huge emerging trend that we have to pay attention to. So now the question is, how do I incorporate the approach that is needed for artificial intelligence-based innovations? How do I incorporate that in my design process? Those are the second level of amendment that we have to make. Being on the cutting edge of emerging trends and responding to those emerging trends in the process.
Thank you. And now this AI has come and it is trying to replace us because the new buzz in the industry is AI and metaverse AI. So is it a threat or a blessing for design?
To me, not a threat at all. It is a blessing if we can use it to augment and complement our work. We cannot take it on face value as a blessing that, let's go with the technology of AI and let's see whether how it can work for us. No, it is a great blessing in terms of an emerging trend, but can I use it to augment anything that I do in the future, innovation? Can I use it to complement? Because human beings are there, right? They're not going to go away, right? Machine learning, artificial intelligence, these are all great, great complementary tools that human beings can use. We talked about bias, for example, right? How do I understand biases? How do machines understand bias? It's a tall order for the machines to do that, right? Or feelings, the sadness and the depression that I feel, can AI do that? Of course, there are some limitations where AI do that because we are human beings, that coexist with machines, right? So that's why I say that AI is not a threat. It's not going to take over the world, but as long as we human beings are there as thinking, feeling people, but we can use it as a tool to complement our work. Already happening, ChatGPT is a simple AI tool. A lot of us have started using it as a tool to enhance our work, right?
Sometimes it is considered to be very unethical when you start using AI, but it's a part of life now.
Right. Yeah.
As Google, you said, is the part of life.
It is, and plus it is a mystery. We still don't know where the world is going with the application of AI. So it is we have to go along with the flow and be conscious about the human beings in the middle of all that, right?
So now I have some personal question to you from your experience. And before that, I request all the participants, if you have any questions, please drop it in your chat box. So I'll try keeping all the questions in this session. And sir, in your experience and through your journey, you must have seen the ups and downs and the use of design, sometimes misuse of design. And so how you define design means, what is your definition of design, and how has design as a profession evolved in the last few decades?
Yes, I've gone through that. I'm fortunate to have gone through the whole ride, as a design change from specifically from 1990 onwards. If I look at 1990, nobody was talking about design thinking. Nobody was using the word ethnography or empathy. And at that time, design was all about, you know, make things pretty. And the marketing department will give you some brief about make this product pretty so that I can sell it. So that is the perspective that design had in early 1990s. So look at the world where we are today. So I had fortunate enough to be part of that journey. As I was practicing in 1990 with Dublin Group, it's a strategy planning firm, a world-leading strategy planning firm, 1990 when they set it up. We were a small group of people. We were driven by the idea that design can be much bigger than that, bigger than form giving. So we created a team at that time. And what are the composition of the team at Dublin Group at that time? Designers like me. They were business folks who worked on marketing strategies. They were technologists and engineers who can work on innovative technologies. They were financial experts who could work on the viability of the ideas. There were mathematicians. We had a PhD in mathematics who could really look at the numbers and give you a really deep statistical analysis. And there was a philosopher in the team. What is a philosopher doing in design team? He was looking at the ethics and the mission and the vision that the world should have about design and like a philosophical look at the world, those kinds of things. So an anthropologist and social scientist in the team who were really experts in understanding people's behaviors, especially cognitive scientists. So this was the composition of the team at that time, 1990, when Dublin was formed. I was lucky to be part of that. So it was wonderful, wonderful magic happening in that team when we took on client projects, working with, we worked with major clients like IBM and Apple and Texas Instruments and all these, all these important companies, helping them think about design in a different way, in a very, very meaningful way. So what was the meaningful way? We brought in the idea of the human centeredness. In order to do design, you have to really do user research or people research. And once you do research, it's a great starting point for any innovation, for any company to implement. They cannot fail, right? That's one attribute that we brought in. And the second attribute that we brought in was systemic thinking. Design is not just the one thing. You have to look at the whole system. The third attribute we brought in was it has to be strategically important. It has to be fused or merged with the strategy planning of the corporation or the organization. Otherwise, design can fall back. It should be part of a strategic plan, any design innovation that you bring in, that one. And more recently, and that has happened over many 12 years. And more recently, from early 2000 or mid 2000, there's a transformation that I've personally experienced, which has brought in the idea of social innovations. We talked about society and doing good for society, right? It is designers' responsibility to do greater good. You're doing wonderful work in creating technology innovations and other innovations, but that's not enough. Like, you take the next step, you take one more step of ensuring that anything that you produce is for the greater good. It'll add value to the society, it'll add value to our environment, it will not pollute our air, right? So those kinds of greater good goals became a key focus for designers, and it is highly growing these days. A lot of my students are seeking jobs in that area of social innovation for non-profit organizations. That's a wonderful happening. Now, that's one. And then over the years, it also became much more evident that we talked about governments, right? Much more evident that governments need to be more innovative, right? So designers can play a big role in making government much more innovative so that they can serve better. So government innovations is another huge, I think it is the most growing area where designers are paying a lot of attention to.
Great, sir. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your information, whatever you got from the experience you had.
Thank you, Manas.
Thank you for listening to CII Podcasts.